right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testor, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizards of the Coast and articles of Gathering Magic. Wow, Mike, you got me. You got me today. Interrupting me, as always, is the one and only super flavorful master of weens, Mike Linneman. And
you.
With us today, we have a very special guest, a man of art. He's been one of the artists of Magic for years and years now, and we've been thoroughly enjoying his art. I have, at least since Mirage. The one and only Jeff Miracola is
Hello.
With us today.
Hello, everyone.
Did he butcher your last name, or did he get it right?
No, Miracola, that is correct. Yes.
Oh, I finally did it.
Not Miracula, not Miracle Man, not Miracle Whip, not Coca-Cola.
What was your nickname as a kid, then?
It's usually a four-letter word.
Yeah, that's fair. But... That's fair. So for people that don't know, Jeff has done over 100 Magic illustrations. $113, we found out, because Ant didn't count the tokens. And, you know, we'd love to hear. We'd love to hear about, you know, you did a ton of them. Most people don't get past, you know, 20, 30. Some not past, like, one or two.
Right.
So tell us the background. How did you get started in this? What was, like, the break? And how did you, you know, keep it rolling from there?
So I'm one of the old guys of Magic, so...
The old guard.
One of the old guard, yeah, like way, way, way back when. Actually kind of started working with WotC in about, I want to say it was 1993, 94, but I was working with them first on another game, RPG called Everway.
Sure.
And, you know, worked on that and it was cool and everything. But the art directors for that at the time, I believe it was, might have been Maria Cabardo, Sandra Everingham. Sure. They became the art directors on Magic. And when they did that, they kind of, I was one of these, the people that they pulled over with them and said, hey, you want to work on this little card game of ours? Yeah, it wasn't even little then, so.
Yeah, so you came over in, like, that first crop that.
Yeah, the first.
1996 of when they brought in, like, oh, yeah. Crap, we need more artists now.
Yeah, exactly. I came over, like, right after the, like, after the original artists. I came in after that, like, 95, 96, and that was. I knew that I was being, I didn't know at the time, but I figured out later on that I was being brought on to kind of redo some of the art.
Interesting.
Of
okay.
Cards. Yeah, I was like a.
So what was your
I was
first
a scab,
card?
You know?
Scab!
I was a scab.
Right. So what was what was the first assignment? Or did they say, Jeff, do like a bunch in different sets?
No, it was Mirage. The first set I worked on was Mirage, and they just kind of threw five assignments my way. And
do you remember which ones? Like what was the what was the, do you can you remember the first one that you worked on or
Miser's Cage? Miser's okay. Cage, yeah. Miser's Cage was the very first painting, and then it was Marble Diamond, and then Floodgate.
Ooh. It's amazing, like. Miser's Cage is a really good, fun artwork.
Yeah.
Like you could have started off with something like, it's not so great, but you started off pretty strong. It looks amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
Where did all those original ones go?
Oh, God. They've been gone a long time.
Sure.
Yeah, the original paintings are gone. They bought them for pennies on the dollar, I tell you, way back when I was so poor, I was willing to sell my Magic paintings for $100. So.
Right. Well, yeah. The market wasn't there yet. That's really
no, it wasn't quite there yet. Although, you know, there were times when you could sell a painting for a good amount of money, mostly in Japan.
But mostly in Japan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then.
Oh, yeah. That is really interesting. That Japan was the art market like way back in the day. They were the ones who were the most interested.
Yeah. Yeah. Every time we did an event over there, you'd sell out of any paintings you brought. It was, and then they didn't even care what the price was.
Wow.
Yeah, found that out.
The original Vorthosis.
Well, we found out with an art show to say, like, where is all this art? And everyone's like, oh, yeah, Mike, you need to go to Japan. And I'm like, ugh, okay. So for the Olympics, I think we're going to go over there and, you know, shake some hands, kiss some babies, that sort of thing.
Right.
So you started in 96, one of the OGs. How did you maintain? Like, how did you keep getting a couple here and there for years and years. Like, what was your secret to longevity, at least in this brand?
The standards were lower back then, man. Let's be honest.
Fair.
I'm serious. Like, I'm really, the standards were lower with that stuff. They hadn't quite come into the whole idea of, I mean, although they had some style, they had style guides for sets, certainly. They hadn't really come into this idea of strong branding, this overall branding and storylines and what it is today. And so it's a lot more strict. It's a lot more, tight visually and more focused on this, the style. And whereas back then, artists were all over the board.
Sure.
Stuff was cartoony. Stuff was, realistic. It was all over the place.
Did you ever have an art description that was just like, Jeff, do work? Or something like, make a frog attacking a guy. How does that sound? Would you do that? Like, did you ever have any ones like a one-liner? You're like, all right, well, I got to do this now.
Well, there were some, like, I remember Ignorant Bliss. There was almost no description at all. Just that. Interesting. Just that title, Ignorant Bliss. What? Show us what that would be.
Interesting.
And
that's gotta be fun. Like, I feel like that's something that artists today don't get to experience. But it's
definitely
here's
not.
The name of a card, or better yet, like, this card doesn't have a name, doesn't have flavor text, doesn't have anything. Just here's a mechanic. Show me this. What do you think this means?
I think if they do that, I think if they do that these days, it's gonna be with somebody that they trust. And have worked with a lot,
yeah,
and they know what to expect. And that artist is mm-hmm. very in tune with, that set or whatever, that world.
Right. I feel like the last time I've heard of that even happening was with Unhinged. I think when they did the card Mize, and they just told Kavada, like, just go do it. It's Mize. You know what that is.
Right.
Like, we're not even going to bother trying to explain it. Just paint something.
Right.
All right. Well, from that, how do you actually make the art?
Now, hold on, Mike.
No.
Mike's getting ahead of himself. Okay. We haven't done our flavor gems yet.
Okay,
he's excited.
I'm excited about the art. We haven't had an artisan in a really long time. And Ant kills me. And he's like, let's talk about words again. And I'm like, oh, God, I don't care.
So one card that we brought up earlier, I'm going to kick this off. You brought up Floodgate, and that's my flavor gem.
Sure.
Because Mirage was the set that visually, for whatever reason, really sucked me into the game. I had a couple cards here and there from, like, Ice Age. That's about when I started, when I was really young. But Mirage was kind of like what cemented for me that Magic was something that that really spoke to me and that I really enjoyed. And at that age, a lot of the whimsy and to your point, the not so much cartoony, but kind of like comical approaches that they had on some of their cards really drew me in at that age. And Floodgate was one of my favorite cards way back in the day, not only because of the art, but because of the flavor text that went along with it. And so the major reason why I wanted to bring this card up is because I just wanted to know, like, what inspired this image, because I have an inkling that the flavor text was written to accompany it. Like, once somebody saw it, they're like, oh, I got to write something to go along with these crazy goblins.
Oh, God. But you're asking me to remember way back then, huh? I could tell you, man, it's too bad I don't have the painting, because a lot of times what I did is I actually, on the back of my paintings, I would tape the original art order so that you could see, like, what they were requesting.
Sure.
But I don't have that with me. But I can tell you, though, that it actually wasn't too far off, like, what they were asking for. They were asking for some goblins to be kind of scurrying or running away from a dam about to break. And then it was just kind of up to me at the, to just come up with that imagery. I mean, it wasn't, I drew a lot of whimsical stuff at the time. It just made sense. And
so let me ask you this. Why make one totally upside down?
Because I just love the idea of, like, one of those dudes just tripping over himself or getting pushed over. And you know, actually, it's something, it's funny you bring that up because you'll see that throughout a bunch of my paintings. And,
right.
And I mean, it's like you look at Fire Spout, there's another one that's turning over. The Beebles, there's always a Beeble kicking another Beeble over. And that same kind of, that's like a running theme or something with me that I just kind of do in pieces here and there. I just like the idea of just clumsy little idiot goblins.
Yeah. My favorite, what I loved about this one, and you hit it on the head in saying that it looks like he either tripped or was punched. And my favorite part of this image is like, you don't know.
Right.
Like, you don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's they could be running. They could have punched him. They could have kicked him. He could just be an idiot and fell.
Yeah.
Like, we have no idea. And the flavor text, like, perfectly plays that up where he's saying, like, quick, Rurok, teach me to swim.
Right.
You know, Goblin Casualty, like, did he say that because he tripped? Did he say that? And they're like, no, dummy, and they punched him. Is this a classic, like, I just, you know, I don't have to outrun the flood. I just have to outrun you kind of moment? Like,
right.
Dig it.
But.
All right. Well, that.
Wonderful.
Fantastic piece. I went in the opposite direction of Ant. As Ant chose a really older card, I chose a newer one. And I had to pick a sliver because you've done a couple of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You did some of the original ones. Well, I mean, you did one in Tempest, for Cripe's sake. Right. And you did one in Time Spiral. And that's Might Sliver.
Might Sliver.
Might Sliver, of course. Really just one because it's just interesting to me because this is one of the slivers that makes the deck overpowered. Because, yep. You know, it's a global effect, makes everything huge, and everything's just angry to deal with. But I really want to know, how did you go about making this sliver in particular, which, you know, they have kind of the same head shape, they got the claw thing.
Right.
How do you make it unique, knowing that so many of them are so close to each other without being derivative?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, that is, I mean, you gotta, it's tricky because, you know, you have to stay within that realm of it's got to look like the sliver. It's got to have all the right parts and pieces. But I think it's just a matter at that point of style, you know, it comes down to the artist's style. I mean, you give this to somebody like Ron Spencer, it's going to be handled completely different.
Right.
And at that point I was trying to, with this sliver, probably, I was trying to go with fewer colors. If you, I mean, obviously you look at all my magic cards, it's like, you know, it's like a clown threw up all over.
Well, you know, I mean, there's some children's lit colors in there. No big deal. I'm going to hurt nobody.
I was trying with this sliver to, you know, kind of keep a more limited palette with it and not get so crazy with all the colors and whatnot. So I kept it in the brown range there for the most part.
Okay.
And I actually think, you know, I have this memory. I think this one wasn't even originally called Might Sliver. I think this might have been the like Muscle Sliver or Muscle something like, and it was like, you know, like this kind of big hulking kind of sliver. They do this all the time in Magic. You know this. You know, you turn in something.
Well, what do you mean? What do they do all the time?
What do they do all the time? I can't imagine. Or you turn in a painting, you get an assignment for something, and it's you know, this is the assignment you got for painting this particular thing. And when they get the art, they go, you know what? Actually, this art fits this other thing better, so let's swap those two things out. You know,
right.
And they realize that this sliver art fits this other sliver title better. It happens all the time.
Interesting, because the Muscle Sliver wasn't reprinted in the new sets.
Right.
So they were like, oh, can we fit this in? And we're like, well, but this art is really freaking cool, so we got to make something for it, obviously.
Right.
So, kind of, that's a cool thing to see. All right.
Yeah.
What do you got for us? Give us a gem. Give us a flavor gem. Come on.
Okay, a little flavor gem. So, okay. So this one actually isn't my art. This is somebody else's art.
Go on.
It's actually a buddy of mine, John Mattson, who has done art for the game. And Tradewind Rider, if you know the card.
Sure.
Yeah, that's actually me. I am the Tradewind Rider.
What?
Yes. So.
No way.
That's you?
That's me. So John used to, John and I were best friends in high school, and then Then, you know, we kind of moved close to each other again when we were older, when I was living in Texas. He came out to Texas, and it was about that time we were both working on magic, and John works from models a lot in his paintings. And so I was constantly posing for a lot of his magic art. And that's, I know I'm in other pieces as well, but for sure, that is me, Tradewind Rider. And I remember the day I'm like in his studio, like he's got me all lit up. I'm standing there with my shirt off. I'm like, you know, I've got my
naked
hands. I'm like, no, I wasn't completely naked. Thank God. But I got my hands cupped like this, you know, I'm doing that whole Tradewind Rider pose. So it's somewhere out there, you know, he's still got the photos of that. You'll have to talk with John Madsen someday.
That's crazy. So, Tradewind Rider is a Vanguard card too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Man, you must have really inspired somebody.
That's,
right?
That's...
If they made a Vanguard card out of a spirit, just like a spirit, just a one of spirit.
This is even a Judge promo from 2002. Like this card's actually really good. That's so funny that it's actually Jeff.
Yep.
That's one of the better gems we've had, no doubt.
Yep. So there you go. That's my little gem, man.
I totally get that. Yeah. All right. Well, moving into it, because obviously all our episodes are only 30 minutes. We want to hear about some of the process that you do. Obviously, sure. You know, we can see someone like a Ryan Pancoast because, you know, he makes a Gumroad. You know, some people show off their reference. Some people show off their color studies or their sketches.
Yep.
How do you go about a painting these days that are, you know, for a illustration or for maybe a game or even for maybe your wife needs a book plate and you need to paint that, you know, in 2 days. How do you go about your process?
So everything I do is traditional. As far as my magic art or any of my fantasy art is all still traditional. So it's all either painted in acrylics or painted in oils or sometimes painted in acrylics and oils.
Ooh.
So it all just depends on the time that I've got. If I've got a long deadline for a painting, if I've got like 2 weeks to do a painting, I'll do it in oils because I just love oils. And
that's
like painting with butter.
It
yeah,
it really is. Yep.
And but if I've got a tight deadline, a week or less, it'll be an acrylic painting all the way.
So it's really it's timing for you.
Timing will determine what materials I use, but they all start out the same. They all start with, you know, a pencil sketch, and once that's approved, that gets transferred to my board. And sometimes I'm painting on illustration board, sometimes I'm painting on hardboard and Masonite.
Yep.
I almost never paint on canvas for any of my like client work.
Well, really, why not?
Oh, why is that?
Because
yeah,
canvas takes too long to dry.
Yes,
any painting on canvas takes too long to dry. It dries a lot faster on illustration board or Masonite. So, I don't even bother with that. And then once that happens, I do all my underpainting in acrylic. Whether I'm doing an oil painting or not, I almost always do my underpainting with acrylic paints.
What's an underpainting, Jeff?
An underpainting is I'm sorry for
not everybody knows.
You're
not
supposed
everyone
to know
knows
this stuff.
Not everybody does. I mean, I know.
No, an underpainting is just it's just a big word for your first layer of paint. That's it.
Oh, I do a lot of my underwriting in pencil.
Yeah. So there.
No, I'm obviously kidding.
So it's just your first layers of paint. It's really you're kind of blocking in all your values. You're not necessarily doing color work at that point. It might just be all one color. It might be an all brown painting at that point. You're just focused on values, the lights and the darks and all that kind of stuff. And then after that underpainting, you can start adding color to the painting.
And you kind of build upon that because it's almost like a guide to see where to go, right?
Yep, exactly. And at that point, it becomes paint by numbers, and anybody can do it, man.
Oh,
you know,
right? Once just apply your sketch to it, and it's fine. You just do it. Draw the rest of the owl after making the two circles. I totally get you.
But you can always paint oils on top of acrylic. You can't paint acrylic on top of oils. So that's why you can do the acrylic underpainting, and then after that's dry, you can work oils if you want for the last couple of layers.
Okay, and that's all. Do you use reference as part of this? Do you
almost never?
Really?
Yeah, almost. That's just kind of been a thing for me. I think it's just was a part of my upbringing, and then I was always drawing alone in my room and stuff like this. So I always had to kind of use my imagination for everything. And so I didn't get into the habit of using reference. So everything just comes out of the head. Now, there is occasionally I've got this goblin and it's holding a sword a particular way. I'll run over to my wife and say, Sylvia, you got to pose, give me the goblin hand now. You know, so she's got to hold the broom a certain way for me so I can just see a hand's position or something. But I'm starting to get into using more reference photos now, like as I'm older, just because I actually find that a challenge.
So you're trying to tell me your wife is not in any of your paintings? Come on.
She's in a few of my paintings, but none of my magic paintings.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Her face isn't on a Beeble somewhere.
Yeah.
Beebles are actually based on my daughter and one of my daughters. So that's probably a story people don't
know.
That's
the best transition. Go into it. Like,
yeah. We need to know what are Beebles and why do they exist?
I don't know why they exist. I tell you that, boy.
Where did they come from?
So I got this assignment for Duelist Magazine. I know you guys remember Duelist Magazine.
Yeah. You had the cover. There was a cover.
They asked me to do a painting of the goblin Squee. And they said, there's just a bunch of little creatures trying to get Squee's toy away from him. And I was like, okay, I'll just draw a bunch of little creatures trying to, all clamoring all over Squee, trying to get Squee's toy. And I was kind of like drawing a blank on what these things should be and whatnot. And I kid you not, this is going to sound so stupid, but it just is what it is. My kids were really little, like, toddlers running around. One of my daughters, she's going to hate me for telling this, was just running around the house butt naked, And I was in my studio. I'm like drawing on some other stuff or whatever, but she ran into my studio butt naked. And she's like, 2 years old or something. Sure. She was playing and she bent over. And when I glanced over at her, she looked like what is now a Beeble. She was just this little pink ball, with legs. It's this pink ball with legs. And it just cracked me up. And I was like, that's it. That's the little creature. And there you have, you got the Beebles. And so I drew these little pink naked Beebles all over Squee, and I think when wizards saw that, they were like, oh my god, these have to be on a magic card.
These have to be a thing. We need more of this.
That's basically what they said. And then they just said, these have to, what are they called? I said, I have no idea what they're called. I just created them. And so somebody over at Wizards, I think it could have been Rosewater, could have been Mark, that came up with the name. I'm not exactly sure. Came up with the name Beebles, and they put the mechanics around it, and there you go. I mean, I created the look of them. They did the rest. And
that is incredible. That is incredible. Okay, so you made more of them, obviously. I mean,
It kept coming back for more.
Yeah, there's nine total cards that have Beebles on them, including unsets, but you did the art for 8 of the 9.
Yeah, it was like really weird when I saw the one, the bursting Beebles. I was like, what the hell, wizards?
What are you doing, man?
What are you doing, man? I'm supposed to be like the Beeble guy. And
they even credited the artist as David Beeble Mania Martin.
I know, like they never gave me that name.
Why you gotta be like that?
I'm like the Beeble creator, Beeble King. Come on,
show
me some props. But no.
What we need is like another card with a Beeble on it, like a legendary Beeble with Jeff's face.
Yeah.
And it's like Jeff, father of Beebles.
Father of Beebles.
Miracola as the artist.
So how often do
the Beeble father?
Do people still ask for these, like on the back of artist proofs or on playmats? Is that still a thing?
Oh my goodness! Yes. Yeah.
Really? So yeah, like almost every event you go to, you'll probably end up doing like one or two of them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, more than that. Goodness gracious. Yeah. 20, 30, 40. I mean, it's people
really?
Love the Beebles. Yeah. Because, I think they represent a more fun time in magic, but a more goofy time, I mean, that stuff was playful and whimsical back then. And everything is so serious now, So... And I think people kind of connect with that, or whatever. And it's also just like, because those cards were so long ago, it just kind of reminds them of, maybe it was the first set that they got into and the first cards they saw. So there's this nostalgic connection to it,
I could totally get that. So
yeah,
Whimsy
position, like in the flavor of like the worlds that they're in, they're positioned in a way where it's very much like a, almost like a toy too, in that like they're in the sets where it's like Urza's Saga, Urza's Legacy, where it's about like kids at wizard school, right? It's almost like Harry Potter
right.
before Harry Potter.
Exactly.
And like, you know, there's the mad teacher who's like taking it away, you know, almost like wind up teeth or something, and then like the Beebles who broke out of their cage and they're causing havoc or whatever. Like they
right.
definitely have that kind of vibe of middle school pranks and stuff, and
exactly.
and like a lot of people who play today, like they might have started in middle school too, so I'm sure that these images spoke to them at the same time that they were getting into magic.
Right, well that's the card Donate, right, where he's just
right.
it's a total
yeah.
prank, you know, boom,
exactly,
Beeble bomb right on you.
So these are whimsical things, right? Obviously
yeah.
you mentioned about some of your color palettes that you use are a little brighter than most.
Yep.
How does this come to you seemingly so easy, so naturally, like the idea of whimsy, you know, if someone wants to say, oh, I want to work in this brand or kids literature, and you're like, I can just do it. Like, is there a basis for how that just kind of oozes out of you, or is it
just
kind of?
I've never been a serious guy, man. I've never been, I mean, although I can do serious art, I think I find it a lot easier to do funny stuff. Just because I've always been that kind of way, you know, I've always been kind of happy-go-lucky. I was voted the class clown in my high school, you know, and so that stuff kind of comes easy to me, to do the funny stuff. The serious stuff is a little bit more difficult, but still challenging and fun, and I like to do it as a change.
Sure.
From doing all the goofy stuff all the time, but I gravitate toward the funny stuff because I love to laugh.
Which is, which we can see, Ant, I'm taking this transition from you. Sorry, not sorry. you have a Kickstarter out that is literally that. Like,
yes.
I don't know what your home looks like, but I'm assuming there's something along these lines that shoot this through. So, Jeff, tell us about this. This is a perfect segue in.
Sure, about the Kickstarter?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I've got this Kickstarter going right now for card tokens. You know, it's nothing new. Artists magic artists at events do card tokens, have been printing up and making their own card tokens for a while. RK Post being one of the pioneers of this, you know, still going strong. And you know, people come to events, they want custom tokens drawn, they want to buy tokens now from artists. It's cool. And you know, I was at an event once a year and a half ago, and just got this idea that all the card tokens I were doing was just kind of random card tokens. You know, you need an elf? Great. A goblin? Great. You need, you know, this? Great. And so I came up with the idea of just, why don't I have like a running theme across all my tokens? So they're like, there's these goblins that are on all these tokens, even though, you know, it's a snake token, it's a goat token, it's a clue, it's a whatever.
Sure.
But there's a goblin on every one of them. And, you know, I just thought so that there's a running theme, a brand. And so I created these little creatures. They're very Beeble-esque type creatures.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And, but they're green, so they're different, man. And,
yeah.
and I call them groblins. They're a mix between gremlins and goblins. And,
there you go.
Yeah. And, you know, the Kickstarter itself is to create this pack of tokens. That right now it's like a 48 tokens in a pack. It's actually going to go to like 54. And it just kind of features a lot of popular tokens that people use. And but they've got this theme, and they're comical, they're funny, and it's funny situations. So it's a play on words for some of them. So instead of an angel token, I've got a token called Soon to Be Angel, and it's got one goblin has stuck a piece of dynamite in the butt crack of another goblin and lit it and ran away. So that's the soon to be angel token, you know.
I think My favorite of the ones to be revealed so far has got to be the elemental, where it's a goblin lighting another goblin's fart on fire.
Yes, yes, to get the fire elemental.
Right.
So you can imagine what the humor has been like in my house all these years, I guess. But that's, you know, that's, I love this stuff. It's fun, and you know, they're, people dig it. It's, why not? Right.
So how many of these were like iterations of each other? Like, did you have like six different hippo ideas and you're like, oh man, I don't know which one to choose? Like, do you have a wall of all these in your house that has, because some of these just like, there's got to just, it just oozes out to have like germ token. You're like, all right, I've got 15 ideas. Which one do I do?
No, some of them I get just like are really tough. And so I'll just get one idea for them. And then others I've got multiple ideas for them. And you know, now I can do like five different squirrel tokens in the future if I want, or something like this. And so I've got all these different ideas for them. But at this point during the Kickstarter, I've got a little over half of the token art done for the tokens. And I'm just kind of plugging along as I go and going down my list of creating the art. And the art for this stuff is actually a lot faster. This isn't painted art. This is a combination of traditional and digital. So I'm doing ink drawings by hand, scanning those into the computer, vectorizing them, and then I'm coloring them in Illustrator and I've, you know, that the goblins themselves, the characters in the tokens, are all kind of flat color, and the backgrounds are a little more like shaded and detailed. It's kind of throwback to the early like Disney art, like,
yeah, if you're, like, Sleeping I see Beauty. The thick lines. Oh yeah.
Yep. So you got the thick lines around the characters, but then you got the little bit more detailed, yeah, backgrounds. So
it reminds me of like Ren and Stimpy too.
Oh, I love Ren and Stimpy. Yeah,
like, yeah, they used to do that. Their backgrounds always looked kind of like they're painted or something, but then, yep, you know, they had these bright, vibrant, right, popping colors, yeah, for cell, you know, anything animated.
Cell animation, yeah.
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 All right, so in building tokens, obviously you're gonna have, you know, you have your first push, you'll have them going forward, which is awesome.
Yep.
You have a play mats that goes along with them too, which is cool.
Yep.
Some of those are the kind of fun. The Goblin Zombies is great. I love the squirrels eating them. It's funny. And then you actually said, hey, what if I have some magic play mats in here too? How did that decision like jump in here too? Did you think of that later? I was like, I'm going to throw those magic players a bone too.
Yeah, I was real reluctant actually to do that because I'm trying to create, you know, because the goblins are kind of a brand in and of themselves, I was really reluctant to bring in any of my magic stuff. But, you know, I'm talking with a bunch of my other magic artist friends and other artists that have actually done Kickstarters, where, you know, I've got a big fan base with the magic stuff. And so I'm like, well, you know, it just kind of makes sense to offer some of that stuff. I didn't want to go nuts. I'm not offering all my magic prints and artist proofs and things like that for magic as a part of this Kickstarter. But I figured at least the playmats would be a little bit relevant because they're a little more whimsical. You got the Raging Goblin playmat, and then you've got the two different Beebles, Bouncing Beebles and Bubbling Beebles. Just made sense, sure, to be offered with this. So, yeah, that's really why. I didn't want to connect too much of my magic stuff to this, but they are card tokens. They can be used for magic. So,
right there. I mean, it's like when in Rome, they're like, well, it does. Yeah, might as well.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. It makes sense. And also, I think, too, it's also about, like, you know, I'm out there on social media all the time. And you know, I keep thinking people should already know that I've got these mats. But, you know, they don't all know that. And so sometimes, they, you know, they'll come to the Kickstarter page and they'll go, oh, I had no idea that Jeff Miracola had Raging Goblin play mats. So,
right.
And that's cool. So that's why you also kind of put it out there for that, and, you know, let them know that it's available.
Okay. So. Okay. So when are these, you know, planning on being done, say at a, you know, obviously you get invited to magic events all the time. Mm-hmm. When do you think you'll have them? You know, maybe you have a few extras after, obviously we want people to support it. You've hit your first goal. Cool. Yep. Do you think you will have some of these at events going forward, or is it just this run?
Oh, I hope so. I hope that by the end of we've got 20 days left as of this, you know, as the moment we're talking, 20 days left on this thing. But, you know, if we reach those other stretch goals and whatnot, then that would allow me to probably have a little bit of extra product to make it available at some events and whatnot. But there'll always be opportunities for me to make more product too in second runs and stuff like that.
Sure. Sure.
So I'll definitely have it at events moving forward.
But for these, literally, you got to have some of these because you may not, realistically. You
know? Yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. They might, they may or may not be available. And some of them are exclusive, like the for the Kickstarter, there's some exclusive zombie tokens and whatnot. And right. And also, these tokens are foil as well. You can get some of them that are foil. Pretty cool.
Yeah, you shipped one off of these, which I thought was amazing, which I was like, all right, I need to get something on Jeff on this because they're cool. And the foil ones really are. They almost glow, I want to say. Yeah. Compared to a normal foil, you have to move them left and right. This, they just don't. You can just see that's that cool. It's foil, like, upon sight. It's a fantastic thing there.
Thanks, man.
I really like them. I didn't feel any integrities any different than any other token I would have. I'm like, oh, these are great. I will use a goblin in a groblin in case of a goblin, which is going to take forever to get used to, but I'll get there.
I'm really happy with the print quality of the stuff. The manufacturer I'm using is somebody I've used for a while now to do all my other tokens, my normal non-groblin tokens that I make, and they've always been really, really good. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go with these people. So.
I really like this idea of just being able to have a theme running through all of your tokens because, you know, like some Magic decks, especially in Commander, like you can have a slew of really bizarre things out on the battlefield at one time. Like,
right.
It's very easy to have a demon and a dragon and a cat and a bird and an elephant and an elemental. And it's like, you know, it's cool to be able to have this option of saying, like, you know what, I'm just going to have an army of groblins. Like, that's yep. What I summon and deal with it, you know? Like,
that's right. Yes. Yeah, good stuff, man.
Well, we're excited about it. I got to get a pledge in immediately. Get some more for me. Cause it's part of it. Like, it's part of being an older player, more enfranchised. Like the first step you do is you're like, oh, I want to get the right basic lands, right? That not just a random land box. You want to bring your own decks and you cater those. But you find out after so many years of playing, you know, a Commander deck that's the same, that customization of tokens seems silly until you remake a deck. Like, you change your Sliver deck around, you change your Zombie deck, and then when you have extra tokens, like, you know, your Groblins here, it becomes delightful. It's like re-entering being an 11-year-old again.
That's right.
And it's hard to even explain that to people in like a Kickstarter video or even online to be like, no, you really should pick up a token or two at a GP or when they do Kickstarters because you don't know the joy that you're missing for dollars. I mean, it's really phenomenal for how much fun you get over time. So we definitely want people for Snack Time to check it out. Check out more of Jeff's stuff that he has out there. I know we're short on time. But I also want to just touch real quick. You did a DVD series in the past.
I have.
Instructional things.
Instructional and DVDs, not just in the past. That's one of my things I'm constantly doing.
Yeah. So I've heard about this for some time. I've heard about you had an acrylic one. You've had an oil painting one. And yep. I've heard wonderful things
Thank you.
From people that have gotten a hold of them. So for aspiring magic artists, yes, you can get tokens. That's good. But
yep.
Things like this from actual magic artists are uncommon. I mean, it's like Jeff, Ryan Pankost. That's kind of it. There's only like you two guys. That's it. Nobody really else goes into like at that level, breaking things down into building a painting really from scratch. So I really want to shed light on that to say that, you know, that is part of one of your benefits and people really should look into that a little more.
Yeah. I've had a YouTube channel for a number of years now, and it just kind of started on a fluke. You know, I uploaded one video and it just kind of blew up, and people were basically saying more. You know, and
you have a soothing voice that, you know, very easy to listen to.
I was willing and able to make more videos, and I had the capabilities because one of my day jobs for a long time was. Working as an interactive art director and a video production person as well. So all the skills were there. And so I'm like, I'll just use these skills. I'll make these videos and marry up the two things, my art with, you know, video production skills and things like that. And it just kind of snowballed and grew and grew and grew. And then it got to the point where people were wanting a lot more detailed information. I was happy to give it, but realized that it was going to be a bigger project. And so that's why I made the DVDs / digital downloads. And those things are like 6.5 hours long. And basically cover every detail, you know, of the process of creating a painting beginning to end, and all kinds of other stuff in between, talking about safety and materials and you name it, all kinds of interesting things, how to prepare painting surfaces, blah, 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 blah. So it's pretty, it's fun. It's been a lot of fun. My next one next year will be on actually inking techniques. So, yeah.
You heard it here first. It's coming.
It is. It's coming. I never stop working, man. That's it. You know,
you gotta get those kids through college somehow. Like, you know, gotta keep at it. Well, Ant, do you have anything else on your list of like 80 questions that I know we made before the show?
So can I just jump in and say one thing?
Sure.
If they want to find out about the DVDs and things like that, just go to jeffmaricola.com. If they want to find about the Groblins, go to groblins.com.
And, yeah, it has the page. You don't have to search Kickstarter Groblin like
Groblins.com. No, you can just go to Groblins, GROBLINS.com. You can just go to Groblins.com. It'll take you to the Kickstarter. When the Kickstarter's done, that'll take you to the actual Groblins website where, you know, we'll see what happens with them after that. So. That's sorry, sweet. My little shameless plug there. Sorry, guys.
No. Like that.
No, that whoever, makes it easier for people to find.
Who did your Kickstarter? Because whoever did it, like, knocked it out of the park. Like,
That's me, man.
That's gorgeous.
I'm a one-man show over here. Well, not entirely. Man. My wife helps me, too, with things, you know. My wife
she's
is actually,
on there. She's listed on there.
Oh, yeah. She's actually, my wife is the writer, and so she writes a lot of the stuff. She's come up with a lot of these ideas for these cards, believe it or not. And she's also the videographer on all my videos. So I do all that. She does all the filming and whatnot. I do the editing because that's my background is editing and graphics and motion graphics and things like that. But all the filming is her and all the writing is her.
I thought you just like contracted that out and you're like, no, that's just the missus. No big deal.
No, that's
just nonchalantly about it.
You're
like,
no,
oh, man,
we make a good team.
Worked out. Well, well, thanks for coming on. We'll definitely put links in here and push it, you know, for now until the end of the Kickstarter. We wish you a ton of luck.
I appreciate that, guys.
We told us where to find it. Say someone wants to ask you a question about it. Can they email you? Can they tweet at you? What's the best way to get a hold of you there?
Oh, my God. I am so not hard to find. You can find me on Facebook. You can email me, you know, from my website. I'm really not a difficult guy to get a hold of, and I respond immediately to people. So, anybody can find me, ask me questions about art or anything they want. I've always said that to everybody. You know, if you've got trouble with a painting and you're having trouble in a certain spot, just contact me. I'll help you through it. And doesn't matter.
Well. Yeah.
So if you follow him on Twitter, you get to see things like sad faces on pieces of wood.
On faces, you saw that today. Sometimes I'll like just have scrap pieces of wood around. I'm like, you know, I'm just gonna paint sad faces on these scrap pieces of wood.
So, it is pretty funny. It is pretty funny. So for people listening, check out groblins.com. Follow Jeff and his shenanigans that he has going on. Ant, where can people find you at the end of the day?
So I'm on Twitter at AntTestator, or can you go to my website at AntTestator.com.
All right. You can find me at Vorthos Mike. I'm an easy Google search away. I'm the only person that shows up, and you can attempt to spell my last name and fail. It's fine. There's four N's. But other than that, thanks for watching today, everybody. Jeff, good luck, and we'll be back again at snack time next week.